Hey everybody, what's going on? It's your good guy here, Prince Onyx. Now, before we get into this episode, or while we're in the midst of this episode, I just want to say, I know you've probably been wondering, how does he do it? Just gets up, fires up that mic, talks to us, and then disappears, comes back, does it again and again. Well, that is thanks to Spotify for Podcasters. Yes, Spotify for Podcasters is the free app, mind you, F-R-E-E, free app for you to use, where you can create your own podcast. You can edit it, you can do the intros, the outros, add music, have your listeners give you responses via voice messages, and all kinds of things, as well as they distribute your podcast to Spotify and Apple Podcasts and wherever else podcasts are available. So, if you're ready to start something where you can also, before I forget, you can make money off of your podcast. Yes, you sure can. You can make money off of your podcast as well because, I mean, inflation is, you know, it's higher than a tank of gas during the Bush administration, and that's both the Bushes, so come on. The rent is not renting like it used to. The money is not moneying like it used to, so who doesn't want some extra funds to either play with or to save, you know, and store like some walnuts with as if you are a squirrel, whatever the case is. You want to create a podcast, you have a story to tell, you have some words of wisdom that you would like to share, this is the platform to do it. So go ahead and download Spotify for Podcasters, and you'll be glad that you did it. Again, it is F-R-E-E, free. You can edit your podcast and all that good stuff in one place, be it on your phone, your tablet, your laptop, all that, okay? So go ahead and do that, because you know you want to. You want to push your story out there just like I'm doing. And now we can go ahead and get back to the show. Peace. Hello, and welcome to the Royal Hour Podcast, hosted by the one and only Prince Onyx. Join me on a daily to weekly basis with the Royal Court and I as we delve deep into a wide range of topics. From entertainment to politics, both professional and streetwise, to personal stories of things that we've experienced. From dating troubles to family drama and even our own tea that'll get spilled. All from a Chicago perspective that at times can be viewed as worldly. You can find us on Anchor FM, Apple Podcasts, and more. This is a show that you don't want to miss. Thanks for tuning in. Hey everybody, what is going on? It's your good guy here, Prince Onyx. I want to welcome everybody back to the Royal Hour Podcast once again with your good guy here, Prince Onyx. Child, listen, we just gonna go ahead and get into it because this shit was hilarious. Like, I should have talked about it last episode, but I'm gonna talk about it now. Like, you know what I'm saying? Now that everything's kind of like, yeah, I'll say the smoke has settled. First things first, because I did say in, if not the last episode, but the one before, that I would listen to that record, the Bigfoot record that was released by Nicki towards Megan. And that shit, it was just like, girl, like, you tweeted most of these lyrics, number one. But on top of that, I'm gonna say this, the song was more, it was more funny in certain parts, like when she was saying, "You lying to the king, Gail." It's just like, you know, her inflictions and how she like pronounces stuff and just, you know, how she says stuff. It was just like, girl, did you really waste your time, the engineer's time, did you really waste everybody's time, including your fans and basically the general public overall, to drop this? Like, girl, this shit, I'm like, baby, this shit is comical. It's comical. And it's just like, notice that, you know, still to this day, as I'm recording right now on Valentine's Day, February 14th, I was going to say February 4th, child, but February 14th, that it's just like, girl, like, nothing's really, nothing, no response still. And it's not going to be a response. I'm pretty sure even when Megan drops the third single, there's not going to really be any, whatever that single is going to be, it's not going to be aimed at her whatsoever. But people will, you know, try to make it seem like, oh, she's still talking about her, blah, 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 when it's just like, it's not giving all that. It's not giving all that. It's giving that, you know what, if we all remember in the intro to Hiss, that Megan said she was going to get everything off her chest and lay it to rest. And that's exactly what she did. Then went on to Good Morning America, talked about the tour that she's doing, talked about, you know, the album that she's dropping right on time for the summer. And that was it. That was it. No mention of Nikki or none of that stuff, because it's like, hey, I'm not about to keep dragging this out. I'm going to let it, you know, let it go, get it off my chest, and I'm done with it. And as a fellow Aquarius, because Megan's birthday is tomorrow, too, by the time you guys get this episode, you know, as a fellow Aquarius, that's honestly how it is. Like, yeah, here's the thing. We get upset. We do. We get mad. We get pissed off. We do, because we're you know, as a water bearer, it's an air sign. And then for me, because I also have, so I got two air signs and a water sign in my big three. So it's a lot, right? But as an Aquarius, though, just going off my sun sign, you know, it's like, yo, yeah, we get hurt. And then after a while, we legit let it go. It's just a matter of, like, we have to get ourselves to that point of letting it go. But yeah, for a while, like, we're the type that, and just as an Aquarius, but I would just even say as the type of person who is very nice, kind, loving, and giving, when you're hurt, when you're betrayed, when people are trying to drag you and all of that stuff, you just sit there and take it to a degree. You know what I'm saying? You just sit back, because it's like, yeah, at first you respond or you don't respond. But if you are, or if you do respond, like myself, I've always been a very responsive person. Like, I'm talking legendary clapbacks. You know, but after a while, you just let it go and you just get quiet, because it's like, you know what? I'm going to watch you self-destruct. I'm going to watch you destroy yourself while trying to simultaneously destroy me. But you can't destroy me because, A, I stopped talking. And then, B, going back to point A, I stopped talking. So it's just like, hey, say whatever you need to say about me, because it's not going to really stick. Those who know my character, they know how I give it up. They know, hey, I've known him longer than this person who's trying to attack him. I've known Prince Onyx longer than this person who's trying to attack him, who used to be a friend of his, who is now coming for him all sideways because of what? Oh, they had a fallout, which, you know, things happen in life, right? But this person still goes out of their way to try to drag me down, and it's like, you see how I'm not responding anymore? Oh, yeah, that's because, girl, I don't care. You still have to bring my name up just to make you feel special, just to get attention. As Megan said in the intro to his, you know, every time she name drops or, you know, talks about somebody or they talk about her, they get 24 hours of attention. So, you know, that shit was just hilarious, though, that whole fiasco, because it's like, girl, how are you telling us at the end of the Bigfoot record that you got four records that you're going to drop if she, you know, when she responds and if she responds, which I'm glad she didn't respond, because we the public don't want to hear any more of what you got saved up in the vault. Like, just let it go at this point, because as Azealia Banks has said in her critique of the whole situation, whether it's Megan, you know, Lotto, Doja, you're not really mad at these girls. You're mad at the white men behind them who are funding their careers or a part of the labels or a part of the board member team, whatever the case is, who's funding their careers. And they're trying to steal food off your table and eat your food. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're trying to take money from you and destroy you. That's who you're really mad at, is the people above them, the powers that be behind the scenes. It's not the rap girls that you're mad at. It's the people who are funding them and cutting the checks for the videos, cutting the checks for the promo, for the marketing, for the this, for the that. You know? Even though in the same breath, in that breakdown analysis from Azealia, she did say some disparaging things where it's just like, girl, okay, you're going to have to leave Megan out of it, in the sense of, like, you didn't have to throw in there that you feel as though Jay-Z doesn't really like her. How do you know that? How do you know that? Like, how do you know that? Because that gives off, and this is me as a fan of Azealia's music, and I can fucking say this, because I'm not that brainwashed to where, oh, nothing she says is wrong. It's like, girl, in this instance, shut your ass up, because it's coming off jealous in the sense of, like, sweetheart, you had a Beyonce cosign. You had a cosign, just like Nicki got, and just like Megan got, and Cardi. You had a fucking cosign. And you fucked that up for yourself, unfortunately. So you see Megan, you know, she's with Roc Nation. She has the prestige, the protection, the this, the that, you know, and you feel some type of way just like Nicki does. So you had to throw in there, oh, he probably doesn't even like her, and he's probably using her for some big business in the sports industry with Texas and that. How do you know? How do you know? How do you know? Like, I was agreeing with her critique of this whole beef, the situation, the breakdown until that part. That's where she had lost me. Because it's like, girl, come on now, really? Really? And then when Megan had announced the deal that she has with Warner Music Group, where she still retains her masters and her publishing, because what people don't tell you in the music industry is that, yeah, owning your masters is important, but the real money is in owning your publishing. You know, if we remember with Michael Jackson, when he had bought Sony's catalog and that had the Beatles catalog in there, I believe he not only had the masters, but he had the publishing, which put a huge target on his back and made him a dangerous man, unfortunately. And, you know, if you know, you know. Him unfortunately passing, because it was really unfortunate. Like, yes, he was, as they were saying, like, addicted to, what was it, the Percocets or whatever he was using, the sleeping pills or whatever medication he was using to help him sleep. But if you know, like, I'm a reasonable conspiracy theorist, but so I'll just say, if you know, you know. But he, you know, had the masters and the publishing, because the publishing is where you really get the money from to put your music in TV shows, video games, movies, hell, short films, web series, commercials. Like, I mean, hell, this past Sunday was the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? So with her owning her stuff, if, let's say, Doritos wanted to shoot something with her and they wanted to use one of her songs, she would get that money directly. And whatever money has to get split between other people, you know, who's ever else's hands are in the pot as far as, like, the other logistics. But, like, as far as owning your publishing and your masters, that is where the money is, the publishing part. The masters, again, you should want to own your masters. It's the master recording, duh. But if you own your publishing, that's where the money really is coming from. So when she had announced that, here comes Azealia critiquing and throwing shade once again. And it's just like, girl, it's like broken clocks are right twice a day. Broken clocks are right twice a day. If it says 2:45 and it's actually 2:45 in the afternoon, it was right. If it says 2:45 and it's 2:45 in the morning, it is right. But if it's 3:30 and the clock is still saying 2:45, come on now. Like, I need people to use common sense, which I know is not that common. I know it's not. But I just need people to think. Because it's just like, girl, it seemed like anytime she or Doja or any other rap girls who you are jealous of, they do something, here you come critiquing them. Like, she's the same one who literally critiqued both Megan and Doja during the pandemic. It was when the BET Awards had happened. What was it? It was, if not 2020, I feel like it was 2021, but I want to lean more on the 2020 version, because everybody had to do remote performances. And she was critiquing how Megan looked, talking about how she gained weight, which everybody had gained weight. Well, everybody just about had gained weight during the pandemic. Right? It was the pandemic. People were eating more than they should, not really exercising. It was just a lot going on. So, but here she was critiquing that. And it's just, you know, critiquing her and Doja's appearances. And it's just like, girl, like, can you chill out? Can you chill out? Can you chill out? Because I don't know. It's just like, you know, again, at this point, it's just the music for me. When she gets into the criticisms and the critiques, because again, I get it. She's in the industry. Rather, people want to say she was. Well, she still is in the industry. She's just on the outskirts of it. She's a pariah, no offense. But she is still in the industry, and she knows more than us. I will give her that. However, it's just the way that it comes off. It's like, girl, sometimes it's okay to just shut your ass up. Like, for real, for real. Because even with her, so speaking of music, since we're really in the realm of music, so during the Super Bowl, Beyonce had the commercial with Verizon, which there was like a rumor about the commercial happening, which, you know, it happened. And she basically, she pulled a surprise and dropped two singles, 16 Carriages and damn, what's the other song, Texas Hold'em, which basically kicked off Act 2, which, damn, the fans were right, child, because here I was hoping that Act 2 would be more house and disco and funk, but you know what, that's just me hoping, wishing, and praying, right? So Act 2 is country, and that a lot of people are feeling some type of way. They feel like she's not really singing country. She's singing R&B on country-esque beats, country-inspired, country-influenced beats. You know, they don't want to really say that she's doing country music. So they're people are finding, whether it's publications, fans, racists, whomever, are finding ways to be like, nah, it's not really country. It's country inspired. It's country-esque. It's country influence. It's this, it's that, right? And so here comes Azealia. And you know, fuck it, because I'm finna actually pull this shit up, because this shit had me just like, girl, once again, shut your ass up. Like, it behooves me that people just don't know how to shut up. Like, it truly behooves me when people just simply do not know how to silence themselves. Like, child, I'm just like, girl, what? Like, I'm going to tell you this right now. You can always count on somebody being on some dumb shit. Like, seriously. You can always count on somebody being on some dumb shit and having something to say about, you know, just about any and everything. And it's just like, girl, like, your critiques are not fucking needed sometimes. Like, they're really not. Like, your critiques are not needed, because it's like, sweetheart, people keep saying, oh, focus on music, and she'll have a witty clapback for it before, because I'm still like trying to look up this stuff. I really am. I wish I would have had to like pull it up somewhere. But she'll steadily trying to critique people and be like, oh, shut up, when, what are you talking about, and I'm not giving you guys shit, and blah 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 blah, and fuck you guys, da, 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 da. But it's just like, girl, maybe if you did focus on music and was dropping it, despite you being independent, but if you were dropping music, like, then maybe you could have more leeway to talk shit. Because it's like, yeah, you drop random songs here and there that, you know, people wouldn't know about unless they happen to randomly go to iTunes or Spotify and be like, oh shit, she dropped something new, and purchase it or download it, stream it, even though I'd like to personally purchase music, because I don't really believe in streaming. I like to download the shit and have like a copy of it. Like, that's just me. But anyway, going on to what she has said about the country records that Beyonce dropped. She said, and this was 2 days ago, so this is from her Instagram story. It goes, Bianca, girl, I love you down, but them R&B runs over the Leslie Fiest back beats is giving pick Misha. Nothing country about it. You're setting yourself up to be ridiculed again. There's a theoretical element to country music. Them critics are not going to accept an ugly blonde wig and bullying from Jay-Z. It's giving big time musical grift. Yes, black girls can make country music, but you're just really not hitting the button. K. Michelle, this is your turn to really execute. It's no shade, but K. Michelle truly understands the assignment. Beyonce, please stop the madness, the gay baiting, the overtly narcissistic attempts to lazily encroach into a genre you think your popularity is going to gain accolades for you in. You're looking like food, sis. You will gag when K. Michelle tears it. So, because speaking of K. Michelle, because everybody kept, you know, dragging her up when the songs had dropped, and K. Michelle literally came out and just said, hey, I don't take no offense to it. I wish her the best. I'm actually looking forward to Act 2. She kept it pushing, like she is, because she's working on her country album after she had dropped her, what she called her last R&B album, because she's not going back to R&B. And ironically enough, people also forgot, which I feel like Monica forgot this too, but Monica is supposed to be doing not only an R&B album, but a country album. Now, I don't know how far along Monica is with said country album. Hopefully, I'm going to say this, hopefully with Act 2, it inspires her to put to, girl, hurry the fuck up, because it's like between her and K. Michelle and all of these other black country artists, you know, the spotlight is about to really be on them. Like, black country artists are really about to soar. Like, they're really about to soar and have a lot of recognition from people who otherwise wouldn't even know about them. Like, from the Kentucky Gentleman to Breland to Tanner Adele to Brittany Spencer to, I'm trying to think, because there's so many of them, you guys. There's like, so, what I already said, the Kentucky Gentleman. Excuse me. Who else? Mickey Gatton. Shea Carter. Like, there's just so many black country artists who, I feel like this, and I had tweeted about this, if they didn't get a call during the original recording, because if they did, you know, they can't say shit until the album comes out. Like even now, like when 16 Carriages and Texas Hold'em came out, the people who had worked on them, like there was this one guy who played like the banjo and he played another instrument on, I want to say, Texas Hold'em, if not 16 Carriages, but he had a hand in like one, if not both, the songs. He's now speaking about what the recording process was like and how everything came to be after it got released, which I'm sure that's how it goes with those NDAs too, that it's like, hey, you can't speak about anything until the music drops. So I would be surprised once we get Act 2 as far as like who's on it. I would be really surprised, like, you know, who's on it. So, you know, with that being said, but just overall, and if they, like I said, if they weren't called for the original recordings, we may get some remixes out of this, which this would be the perfect time for Beyonce, with her popularity, as Azealia puts it, her popularity and her platform and her celebrity, to bring these black country artists, her fans and just people who like country music, and they see Beyonce doing it, so it's like, okay, oh, she did a remix with so and so, let me, with the Kentucky Gentleman, for example, let me get into them. Oh, she got Brittany Spencer, let me check her out. Oh, she's working with Breland, let me check him out. Oh, she's working with Tanner Adele, let me check her out. You know what I'm saying? Like, it can go so many ways in a positive direction. Now, do I think that she's trying to use her popularity to gain, you know, the accolades in country music? Not necessarily. She's at the point in her career where she can do whatever the fuck she wants, because everybody's already saying that Act 3 is going to be rock and roll. Because when you really follow this three-act project, Beyonce is reclaiming these genres that we as black people created, that were fucking stolen from us. The white version of house and funk and dance is that electro techno shit. The white, well, shit, there's the white version of country and there's the black version of country. So many black people have an aversion to country music, unfortunately, because of the white watered down, whitewashed version of it that we know it to be, versus actually doing their research and seeing that, oh wow, black cowboys and cowgirls were the first one, like, we were the first, the originators throughout time, and then shit got stolen from us. Rock and roll, another genre that was stolen from us. Hell, at one point the motherfuckers had took jazz and blues from us, and only just recently, within recent years, that music has came back. That music has come back to us. Like, I just wish that we as a culture and we as a people just really understood how powerful we are, and we understood what has been taken from us. And when I say really understood, like, do your research before you, you know, cast, you know, write something off. Like, people still to this day, black folks will still call house music oomph oomph music, which, yeah, it's a cute little running joke, but it's like, the history of it, we created that shit. Like, look at how many black artists dominated the house and dance charts. In the 90s, for example, Martha Wash, anyone? Crystal Waters? Like, the people who dominated that shit, it's like, bruh, they... CeCe Preston, like, yo, they deserve their just due. And so it's like, you know, Act 1, even though I really wish we kept it going with the house and the disco, hey, we're stepping into country. And even me, as somebody who, as you guys know, I live in Chicago, born and raised, but both my maternal and paternal sides of my family origins originate from the South. So those country songs, 16 Carriages, it really touched me in a special place. And Texas Hold'em, I can't wait to, whichever dance everybody decides is the official one from the people on TikTok, I can't wait to learn it. Hell, I'm thinking about getting a custom-made cowboy hat from a black-owned business. Okay, y'all will see it when y'all see it. And, shit, I gotta see how to get some cowboy boots. Like, I'm really about it, because it's like, yeah, I'm born in the Midwest, but it's like my roots, those songs spoke to me, so I'm looking forward to it. And even with Act 3, because I'm telling y'all, when it comes to Act 3, when she starts rocking black hair, oh baby, y'all know what time it is, okay? But anyway, going back to it with Azealia, it's like, once again, here comes the jealousy, right? Because it's just like, girl, You're mad that you fucked over and fucked up and fumbled your cosign from her. That's what that boils down to. How you fucked that up? I look, girl, it sucks. Because if you would have played your cards right, who knows? You could have probably had the prestige and the protection of a Roc Nation as well. You talk about how Nikki wants to be a Roc Nation girl. Bitch, the same could be said for you. The same can be said for you. That you wish that you were a Roc Nation girly. Who the fuck wouldn't want to be a Roc? Who the fuck wouldn't if you know what all that shit comes with? Who wouldn't? I ask that to everybody listening. Who wouldn't want to be a part of something that gave you the protection and the prestige and the this and the that, the budget, the you know what I'm saying, the management, whatever it is that you needed as an artist, and to make sure that you still got your creative control and creative rights, again, owning your masters and your publishing, the right month to make the right money moves. Who wouldn't want that? Who? So, yeah, I just overall look. Azealia, I love you lots. Love you. I love you down. But girl, shut the fuck up sometimes. Please. Shut the fuck up. Focus on giving us Fantasy 2, which I'm still holding out hope for that to come out. You see how I can say that? Like, I can say that it's like the music that I know that you are working on, I look forward to it. Focus on that. Better get you focus on your lawsuits with the man who literally who's literally made millions and is still making millions, damn near billions, off of Broke With Expensive Tapes, to where you have to re-record that whole fucking album just so that you can get all of that money directly, all that money that you missed out on. Focused on them, on them motherfuckers who fucked you out of a lot of money. Focus on them. So this is the little impromptu music segment, I guess you can say. But yeah, those are my thoughts on, you know, everything from the Bigfoot fiasco to Azealia just, you know, talking her shit and, you know, Beyonce going country. I'm looking forward to it. And speaking of which, them visuals are going to be something serious. I'm telling y'all right now, it's finna give some Multiverse of Madness type shit. It's finna give Everything Everywhere All at Once type of vibe, like, because it's like she's literally going through a time machine, if you will, a time machine of different, you know, different genres that have black origins, and we are not ready. Like, these visuals are finna be stupid crazy. Like, and I'm convinced she shot everything for not just act one, but even act two, act three, and it's just a matter of like strategically dropping everything. Now, there are some of us who think that after act two, we will then get the visuals and then act three. But now I'm leaning on she's probably going to wait until act three and then really give us the visuals, because then it'll be all complete. You know what I'm saying? But I'm looking forward to it. I'm down for the ride. I'm down for the journey. And that is all I got. Okay, 25 minutes in. I hope everybody is still here. Get your libations. Y'all know me. I like to talk. I like to talk, okay? Y'all already know what it's given. But yes, thank y'all for tuning in. And you know what? Me and my vocals and my voice box are going to be right back after these messages. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Royal Hour Podcast with your good guy here, Prince Onyx. Let me know what you guys think. You know I love it when you talk back. And we'll be right back after these messages. Peace. I'm pretty sure most of you are familiar with the line from the Notorious B.I.G. Black and ugly as ever, however. So I'm here to tell you about Black and Ugly, a clothing line where the phrase itself is an oxymoron and it is not everything that you think. Rather, it's everything you think it's not. Here at Black and Ugly, you are going to find unique pieces of clothing, from hats to hoodies to sweatpants to camouflage pants to backpacks to little pins that you can put on your backpack as well as your clothing, down to jackets, hockey shirts, so on and so forth. And mind you, this is not your typical average wear. No, this is wearable art created by a black woman for the people, by the people. This is like FUBU 2.0. Black and Ugly, it's everything that you think it's not. Be sure to head on over there and let them know that the Royal Hour, Prince Onyx, sent you. Ow.
And welcome back to the Royal Hour Podcast with your good guy here, Prince Onyx. So let's go ahead and talk about it, right? So Monique went to Club Shay Shay, and she had every, she won the people over once again, you know what I'm saying? Because we've seen what she has gone through with being blackballed, blacklisted, and treated unfairly, which is really fucked up. And it's even more screwed up because still to this day, there are black people, and in particular, black gay men, because I'm a black gay man, and I'm going to always, you know, rein my own community by their throats every chance I get, are all being very dismissive about her. Now, is she owed an apology for what was done to her? Absolutely. Will she receive it? Most likely not, because, you know, these two individuals in particular, Oprah and Tyler, they don't see fit to do it. Lee Daniels, he did, thanks to T.S. Madison having a conversation with him, because that is his friend, and she didn't like seeing two people that she cared about and loved beefed out. And so, you know, they patched things up. But these other two, child, it's gonna take damn near the end of the fucking world, some post-apocalyptic type shit for them to come off their high horse, right? But so she won people over, you know, in the sense of like, you know, everybody was like, oh, damn, that's really fucked up what they did to her. And for the ones who feel like, oh, you know, you need to just let it go. If somebody told you to let go of something that really fucked you up, that no matter how much you progress and move forward in life, it still fucks with you, how would you feel? Because she was publicly fucking embarrassed. Because here she is, you know, with her friend Lee Daniels, who she was only contractually obligated under his production company. There was never a contract, never a deal or anything that she signed with Lionsgate. She only had a contract with that of Lee Daniels production, with his production company. Paid the $50,000. And you notice how whenever she brings up the pay for Precious that she got, she never complained about it. She never was like, all they gave me was $50,000. No, it was, hey, this was what was in the contract. I came through for my friend, helped him out. And he showed me the script, sent me the script. I was like, yo, what the fuck is this? And she was, you know, reading it like 5 to 10 pages in or whatever, however many pages in, and was like, yo, what the fuck? And he was like, bitch, this is finna be epic, which it was. Black trauma, but yes, it was epic. You know, it was epic with black trauma. So anyway, she, you know, did what she did. And that was that. You know, she promoted it here in America, and that was that. Now, because Lionsgate, they loved how much she promoted it. Oh, okay, can we send you over to the Cannes Film Festival over in Paris, France, to promote the film? Sure, but, hey, can I get paid for this? Because, like, I did what I was supposed to do for my friend per my contract with him. That contract has, you know, been taken care of. Oh, no, we never pay anybody to promote films. What? No. We'll give you first class and, you know, 5-star hotel. We'll extend your stay over there, you know, so you can stay for an extra week if you want, you know, and enjoy Paris. I'm good. I'm okay. And that right there, like, her being respectful and her husband, which I will get to that nigga in a second, because Jesus Christ, Sydney, really? But anyway, you know, being respectful and just declining it somehow translated into her being difficult. And if we've learned anything from Janet Hubert, the blacktress, as she calls herself, you know, black actress, what happened with her being labeled difficult from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with Will Smith, it fucked her career over as well. It fucked up her career too. For years, and it wasn't until recently, in recent years, that her and Will, that Will finally apologized, owned up to what he did, and made things right. Because in that dynamic, he was the young kid on the scene. She is, you know, the older thespian doing television acting and, you know, doing good. But, you know, she got blacklisted all because she was labeled as difficult. And Will, being oblivious, I would say, at the time, of his power, and again, the power dynamic, because you're the star of the show, so whatever you say goes type of thing, did what he did, said what he said, and it's just like, bro, what the fuck, you know? And it took this long for her to, for them to sit down and him to, again, own up to what he did. So when you label a black woman difficult in any industry, be it sports, entertainment, well, sports and entertainment are kind of the same, but like, you know, sports, television, film, theater, music, marketing company, Fortune 500 company, whatever the aspect is,
that really hurts them, because then it's like, oh, you're difficult to work with. That means you're not going to just, you know, bow down and take anybody's shit, which, I mean, nobody should. What the fuck? Like, nobody should take anybody's shit, but we're taught that we're supposed to. Hello? Slavery? Anyone? Hello? Oh, okay. So, you know, with Monique, it's just the story has stayed the same. Her story has never changed. And there were people who even, some people on Facebook, were even talking about how, oh, well, you know, she is an actress after all, implying that she's sticking to a script. If my story of what happened to me is coming off as a script, again, what does that then say about you when you're going through something? Because so many people regular, let's remove the celebrities for a second. Shannon, Oprah, Monique, let's put them on pause for a minute. When something happens to you, the regular everyday citizen, and you carry that around, and you're unhealed, and in your unhealed way, you are bleeding out on everybody, metaphorically, bleeding out on everybody who didn't hurt you. And your go-to script, your go-to phrase is, oh, well, such and such happened to me, and this happened to me, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, yes, it happened. I am sorry that it happened, but you cannot bleed out on me because I didn't fucking hurt you. Oh, how does that make you feel? Right. So I don't really understand how her story, what happened to her, is coming off scripted. How do you not see that when somebody has the same, if one person has the same story, and in that story they're naming the folks who did what they did to them, in this case blacklisted them, and then we talk to those people and their story keeps changing every time we talk to them, but the person who is the victim, their story stays consistent, what does that then tell you? That in between this situation, this fiasco, somebody ain't lying. Somebody ain't lying, but somebody is. And it don't take too long to put 2 + 2 together for it to equal 4. Come on now, somebody. I know somebody hears this, okay? So, I don't get how that can come off as is scripted. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? But anywho, you know, the interview, it was really good. She dropped a lot of gems. She definitely took as many polite, nice, nasty shots at Tiffany Haddish, who we can all just agree she's never been funny. Tiffany Haddish has never been funny. She really, if we're going to be honest once again, she really got put on through, you know, the gatekeepers. You know what I'm saying? They needed a black female comedian. They needed a black woman who was a comic. Not as funny, of course, but, you know, because, you know, I think about all the other black female comedians who should be in her spot and they're not, who are way funnier than her, and it's just like, interesting. But she gets put on. She's not really that funny. She's in a lot of fucked up controversy, from the DUIs to the whole child grooming situation with Ari Spears, which there's some stuff that came out about him allegedly blocking other black comedians from comedy sets and comedy shows because he didn't want somebody else who was black to perform after him in case their material was the same, was, you know, too similar. It's just like, when I tell y'all, 2024 truly is the year of exposure. Like, everybody who you can think of, from political leaders to people in the entertainment industry to just whatever and whomever who's been doing dirt behind the scenes for so long, behind the veil, like, you know, the Wizard of Oz and The Wiz, that veil and that cape and those drapes are getting ripped down. And we are seeing these people for who they really are. We are seeing these people for who they really are. And it ain't cute. And it makes you go, oh my God, I can't believe it. But when you're talking about folks, as Monique said, who are, you know, deemed heroes and legends and damn near put on the same pedestal as if they are a god of sorts, when you're speaking out against them, it's like, oh, how dare you? Oh my God, how dare you? And it's just really fucked up, because none of us never knew until this was brought up, that originally Monique's family tried to go to Barbara Walters to do an interview, and Barbara Walters called Monique and let her know flat out, hey, I rejected them, I shut it down, I'm not finna do that to you. I wanted to hit you up as a friend to let you know, hey girl, your family tried to get me to do an interview with them. Mind you, Barbara Walters was a white woman. But then here they go to Oprah. And, you know, it, honestly, for me, when I really think about it from an analytical viewpoint, it was damn near the equivalent. If it was starting to come off like, yo, was this some type of humiliation ritual? It's like, oh, okay, Monique just won the Oscar. She's, you know, Oscar, not only nominated, but an Oscar-winning actress. Oh, you know, she's been through so much in her life, but look at where she is now. Yeah, so now let's humiliate her. Let's embarrass her. Let's, you know, let's bring out and air out her dirty secrets, which I don't think it was ever necessarily a dirty secret. I believe that earlier she was in her career was honest about what happened to her growing up. You know, one of her brothers was her manager, but then there was the other brother who unfortunately molested her. And parents didn't do shit about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, but to drag them out and for them to be the opportunists that they were, you know, to get clout off of and notoriety off of being her family. And, oh, yeah, let's do an interview. And you got the brother who assaulted her, who molested her, talking about how he wanted to do the interview so that he could help parents to like know the signs of what's going on. Baby, that is not what it was given. It's giving, oh, my sister who I fondled is famous. Now let me use this bitch's clout and her notoriety to, you know, get some clout for myself. Let me use her fame and her big moment and all of this stuff to, you know, let me try to get something out of the deal. I already fucked her life up, you know, by doing what I did to her as a child when she was a child. Now let me continue to humiliate and fuck with her as an adult. You know, and it's just like, yo, what the fuck? Like, that shit is just... And then for Tyler Perry to admit that he said that shit about her being difficult, but he promised that he would apologize publicly after he did the Madea Boo, either the first one or the second one. I believe it was the second one. When that one dropped, he was going to, you know, make things right, and he never did. Then you got Al Sharpton, who reached out to Monique, but then he turned on her because, you know, oh, he got to ride on Tyler Perry's private jet. And then Stephanie Mills, she spoke with Monique and then spoke with Tyler, and Tyler told her, oh, I'm never apologizing to her. She needs to apologize to me, and I ain't trying to talk to her husband and da 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 da. When it's just like, okay, damn. So when she came to you though during that the Hoodie Awards or whichever award show it was, I want to say it was the Hoodie Awards, went backstage to talk to you. This was during the whole Precious situation about, okay, Lionsgate doesn't want to pay me, but can you or Oprah, can somebody cut me a check? Because it's like, just give me some money and yeah, I'll promote. I'll go overseas and promote, but it's like, I'm not working for free. I'm not working for free. And I know, right, to a lot of people that sounds crazy, especially when you first start out in the entertainment industry. Baby, you're going to be doing a lot of shit for free, okay? You are going to be doing a lot of shit for free. For the free 99. And the payoff, unfortunately, because fuck it, it is what it is. It's unfortunate, but the payoff is making connections, networking, you know, getting stuff for your reel, and, you know, just little things here and the things that will help you, you know, later down the line. But it's just like, damn, you know, it sucks, but that's just unfortunately how it is. And not always, because you do get to a point where it's like, hey, I need to be paid this much. You know, unless you absolutely believe in said project and you don't mind working for free, that's, you know, that's a different conversation. You know, if you don't mind working for free, like, that's a different conversation where, you know, if you don't mind working for free, cool. But, you know, when it is a problem, in this case, it was a problem because it's like, okay, I, once again, there was no contract between her and Lionsgate. There was only a contract between her and Lee Daniels. She never shied away from that. That it's like the only contract in this situation was the one between her and Lee Daniels. Never was there a contract between Monique, the actress, the comedian, whatever, and I was going to say Tidal, Jesus Christ. And damn, I'm just forgetting this production company, y'all, and Lionsgate. There was never a contract with them. So it's just like, you know, damn, again, she just asked for some money. Like, hey, can y'all just like pay me and then I'll go over there, promote it, and we can all get along. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, hey, I'm asking you guys to promote this. And
Hey guys, what's going on? It's your good guy here, Prince Onyx. I just wanted to give you a friendly reminder once again. Please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and a comment and tell a friend to tell a friend. Because when this show grows, so do you as the royal court. So I want to thank y'all again for tuning in and just give a friendly reminder to be sure that you are sharing with your friends, your family, your lovers, hell, your one-off, jump-off, whatever the case is, and let them know the Royal Hour is the place to be and the podcast you want to listen to. And now back to the show. So as I was saying with Monique, you know, like she was saying, and she's always said, there was a contract only with that of her and Lee Daniels. She never complained about the $50,000 that she was paid. It was never that. The only issue came from the situation with Lionsgate. They wanted her to promote the film overseas, and she just was asking for a compensation. And it wasn't like she was asking to be an executive producer or anything where, you know, you could have got more money on the back end, things like that. It was simply just like, hey, okay, if you guys want me to go overseas, that's fine, even though I really want to just spend time with my family right now, because it's like I've already done my portion as far as the contractual obligation with that of my friend Lee, with that of my friend Lee Daniels. And so, you know, they just felt the way about that, about, oh, how dare you ask to be compensated for promoting the film where we never compensate and pay people, which I don't know how that, again, I don't know how that works in the industry. I feel like when actors are on the press run and the press tour for the film, I believe they should get money for it, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like, hey, you're still helping out the project by promoting it and making sure that not just your fans go see it, but, you know, the average moviegoer, if they're the type to watch interviews of the cast members who participated and got cast in the film, you know, or the TV show or whatever it is, whatever the form of medium is that you are watching, you know, you're making sure that they go see it so that the studio gets their money, but also that you get your money too, you know, like, especially depending on how the contracts are, you know, placed in, you know, set in place. But basically, it just boils down to the fact that she was fucked over. And it's really sad, because even when she spoke about Taraji's situation, come to find out, when Monique had her talk show and Taraji was on it way back in the day, like, you know, over a decade ago when it was on BET, you know, when they were in Monique's dressing room, Monique had said to Taraji, it's like, girl, we can't just keep waiting and waiting and waiting, you know, for the right time, or just keep, you know, basically just keep taking scraps and take what they give us. Because oftentimes when you do that, you end up waiting until you're dead. And it's only in your death do people say, damn, so-and-so was right. Damn, so-and-so, they had it all figured out the whole time. Damn, so-and-so, this, and so on and so forth. So, you know, she told Taraji early on, years ago, it's like, girl, we can't just keep sitting around just waiting for, you know, motherfuckers to treat us right. And so then, you know, fast forward to this whole situation where even she brought up that it's like, yeah, there is tension between Taraji and Oprah. As much as people wanted to try to deny it, no, there definitely was tension. Because it's like, you know, she's an executive producer and everybody feels like, oh, well, y'all want her to do all this other stuff when the studio's supposed to. Girl, here's the thing. You're an executive producer. You're a part of the studio system. So therefore, the same way the studio and those executives should be dishing out money, you should too. You should ensure that they have food on set. You should ensure that the conditions on set are, you know, not bad or not horrible. You should ensure that if someone doesn't want to drive themselves, and that they can have a driver, because it's like you just make sure when there's millions upon millions of dollars put in place that you make sure everything is covered, not just some. But see, what happened was, and this is what Monique had revealed in her interview, is that when Taraji had said that she auditioned for the film, that right there already sealed the fate, not just for her, but for everybody else on the film. Because if you have these people who have long resumes to where they should not necessarily have to audition, it should just be an offer. And she was saying, because from her perspective, nowadays, she doesn't audition for anything. She's an offer only actress, meaning that, you know, an offer comes to her. Like, if you want her to be a part of your production, it's an offer that comes to her. It's not, hey, can you audition? Which, I'm not going to lie, sidebar for me, and this is just me, and this is not to, like, diminish anybody who I do want to work with,
I like for people to audition because I want to know I want to make sure that you are the right fit for this role. And if not for whatever the first or the primary role, which all of the roles are essentially primary, they all play a role and play a role and a factor in the story. If you're not fit for that one, well, hey, let's have you audition for this one. That's just me because of how I operate. But, you know, knowing that, it's like, okay, Monique, whatever, you're an offer only type of girl. Okay, chick. But anyway, she's an offer only type of actress. So that means that, you know, she's only going to do offers. She doesn't audition, because when you audition as a seasoned actress, as a veteran actor in the business, you're basically letting the industry and the studios know, oh, yeah, you guys can treat these black projects any type of way. But if this was like if this was Mission Impossible, for example, they wouldn't treat Mission Impossible like how they did The Color Purple. Like, the conditions would not have been what they were. But that's because you fell for the trap, as Monique had kind of put it, you know. Now, the part where she said that Taraji, and I really would have to rewatch it for a third time because I watched it twice, and people were saying that they didn't like how she essentially was calling Taraji weak. And it wasn't like in a bad way. It was more so like, okay, she is vulnerable and she's breaking down in front of all of us in those interviews, breaking down, crying. And it's just like, damn, like it got to that point for everybody who watched those interviews, who heard those interviews. It took for everybody to have some damn empathy for her, for a black woman, not just an actress, because, you know, people are quick to dismiss actors, issues with pay discrepancy as like rich people problems, which, you know, that's debatable. We can talk about that. But it's like, from a human perspective, when it comes to empathy and sympathy, it took for this woman to break down in front of all of us for y'all to, like, you know, not y'all who are listening, of course, but y'all, as far as y'all know who I'm talking about, the motherfuckers outside the palace. It took for them to finally have empathy and sympathy for her. Because for me, I'll tell you this, when I was an extra, I forgot which season this was on Chicago Med, but this was around the time that Empire was still filming. All the shows that were shot here in Chicago were still filming. And so I remember we were in holding, which is like, you know, the space where the extras, you know, chill out until, you know, they're needed for the next scene or whatever. We were all chilling, and some chick just randomly had bought Taraji up because they had worked on Empire. And it was these two black women. They had like bought it up, and just, it was a few black people, really, because it was a mixed group of extras. So it was black, white, Latino, Asian. It was a whole mixed group of us. But of course, everybody was like sitting with their respective groups, like, you know, in the cafeteria at school, per se, when you got the black kids all sit together, the Asian kids all sit together, the Latino kids all sit together. So it was kind of like that, but with adults. So I don't even know how this conversation got brought up, but I remember it, how they were like, oh, yeah, you know, when I was on set, Taraji had a bad attitude. It was because somebody had said that when they worked on Empire one time, and it was an episode or a scene where Cookie was involved, that Taraji was nice to them. Like, she was nice to them and the extras, you know, she was nice to them. But then this other person, this chick, had a different story and was like, oh, well, when I was there, this happened. She had an attitude and she was a bitch and da 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 da. And then the other one, she ended up, you know, basically giving piggyback off of that peanut gallery type shit, where it was like, oh, you know, yeah, she just had a nasty demeanor. And that girl that they had play, I forgot what her character's name was, but she was the daughter of Chris Rock's character. I think his name was Freddie something. Not Freddie Gibbs, but it was like Freddie Gatz or something like that. She was the girl that played his daughter, who then found out that Lucius had him killed in prison. She tried to shoot Lucius, but Jamal ended up catching a bullet. So, you know, she was like, oh, yeah, you know, she going to end up getting typecasted, too, because she going to end up playing the same role, da-da-da-da-da. And so it's just like, y'all are already dismissing them and writing them off as if that one girl, I think her name was like Brianna or something, is a one-dimensional actress, which, I'm not going to lie, in other projects that she has been in, she definitely has been typecast. Maybe she needs to definitely deal with that. But with Taraji, it's like, okay, you're saying how she had an attitude or whatever the case was when you were on set that day, you never know what the hell may have happened with her personally. I'm not excusing, I'm never going to excuse piss poor behavior in any workplace, whether it's on a film set or hell, your regular 9-to-5. You know, hey, keep that attitude in check. You know what I'm saying? Don't bleed out on everybody else. However, it's like, again, from a humanistic point of empathy and sympathy, you never know what could have happened prior. And maybe she just, you know, hey, she just had a moment, or she was having a day. But if she didn't personally take it out on you, why then do you need to make a spectacle of it? Oh, because you wanted to contribute to the conversation, but you couldn't really contribute positively, so you had to go the low vibrational route. Ah, okay. So I say that to say that it's just like, you know, especially because Taraji, come to find out, she had to advocate for their trailers when they were filming Empire to not be bed bug infested, because they were infested with bed bugs. Which that shit blew me back. That shit blew my top, because I'm like, what? Like, so y'all had trailers that were infested with bed bugs. But then also Monique, when she was working on the film Almost Christmas, their trailers literally blew up. Now, I remember that shit because she had posted it back then when it happened. And she posted it again after the Shannon Sharp, the Club Shay Shay interview. So it's just like, you know, they warned, they told the people, hey, we smell gas. And then the people who were working on the set, the crew, they were like, oh, yeah, well, we told Mr. Packer, and he, you know, just said, OK, like he dismissed the fact that people are telling you, hey, we're smelling gas. And sure enough, boom, the trailers blew up. And thankfully, nobody was harmed, because like Monique said, what were you going to say to her family, to Donald Glover's family, to Gabrielle Union's family, to J.B. Smoove's family, to young D.C. Fly's family, to Kimberly Elise's family, all the people who were involved in the film whose trailers blew up, Omar Epps? Like, what were you guys going to say to them had they would have been in the trailers and perished that day? It's just crazy how like people really talk so much shit and do a lot of underhanded shit behind the scenes because they know that they can, or they think that, oh, ain't nobody gonna ever say shit about it. Baby, Monique was revealing it all. How Will Packer on Almost Christmas was talking about how he's the head nigga in charge and this, that, and the third. And they were more concerned about the wigs than a person's life, her life in particular. And those wigs got destroyed. But they were more concerned about fucking wigs and hair pieces than someone's life that could have been lost. A wig can be replaced. Go to the nearest beauty supply shop in the hood or hell, wherever you need to go over in Hollywood and or Atlanta, where I believe it was filmed in Atlanta. Go wherever the fuck you need to and buy some more wigs. You got the budget for it, right? Because here y'all are giving them trailers that, again, you would not give a Tom Cruise. You would not give a Jennifer Lopez, a Ben Affleck. You would not give a, you know, I'm trying to think of somebody else. Melissa McCarthy. You wouldn't give this to, you know what I'm saying? Like, you wouldn't give these trailers to the white counterparts. You wouldn't give a trailer that ends up blowing up. You wouldn't do that to a Meryl Streep. But we do it to each other. Why? Because in any industry, a black person who is in a position of power is going to always low-key make, nah, fuck low-key, they're going to always lowball people who look just like them. And it's like, to me, it comes off like this weird hazing ritual. This like, you know, as if we're all in a fraternity sorority type of thing where it's like, oh, let me take you through as much bullshit that I went through just because I can. And it's like, why do you feel the need to do that? So, again, going back to, you know, Taraji having to talk about how she had to advocate for so much with Empire and how she almost walked away from The Color Purple. It's crazy that it took for this woman to be breaking down and being so fucking vulnerable and basically being showcased as weak in front of us. I feel like that's where what Monique was talking about. Like, she was showcased as weak in front of us. And all we could do was just sit back and watch and be like, God damn, what? Like, that shit is hurtful to see, because it's like, yo, they're really fucking with her, and she makes more than all of us on an everyday basis. But they're treating her like, oh, girl, fuck you. Like, you know, we can treat you any type of way and you're just going to accept it. And that's fucked up. So I feel like that was where she was really trying to break it down, that it's like, yo, this, they had to literally break her, like they, you know, okay, on the plantation, fuck it, because we got to take it to historical context. Whenever a slave was rebellious, they would break them in front of everybody else. Like, I know everybody loves to talk about the whole, well, not everybody, but the homophobic, you know, pseudo pro-black hoteps who are really not trying to help the community at all. They love bringing up the act of buck breaking, where the slave men, the male slaves, when they were rebellious and they resisted, they were basically raped and sexually assaulted in front of everyone, their wife, their children, their friends, their family. There was, you know, they were assaulted in front of everyone. And then everybody turned their backs on them because, oh, how dare you let this man do this to you? As if y'all didn't see what happened in order to ensure that he was broken down to the lowest form of himself so that everybody else knew, oh my God, okay, let me not rebel neither, because I don't want them to do what they did to you know, old Johnny to me. You know, so it's like they do these types of things where they break you down. It's a form of buck breaking to a degree. It's a form of it in the form of like a humiliation ritual and just breaking you down to where you're vulnerable and you're literally breaking down crying in this interview because you're like, damn, yo, like I'm fucked over 10 times and I got to pay a team of 15 to 20 people. And it's like the money that I get left over, it's like, again, she walks away with a cute coin. She does. You know, Taraji walks away with a cute coin. But it's like, you know, damn, like shit, the shit still, it still feels like you're getting the short end and the shit end of the stick. You feel what I'm saying? So, yeah, it was interesting that the whole interview, like there's different parts. It was really interesting, especially the part about the Parkers finding out that that show made a hell of a lot of money. Meanwhile, her and Countess Von and everybody else who was involved, the actors, didn't see a penny of that. Now, granted, her and Countess, as she said, and she clarified, because I'm glad Shannon had asked for clarity, they were making $55,000 per episode. It wasn't just $55,000 broken down in, you know, in between 22 episodes. It was $55,000 per episode. They should have definitely been getting paid more, especially when you consider TV shows like Friends and how they were at one point getting like millions of dollars per episode because the cast all came together and basically demanded that the studio and the network pay them, you know, X amount of dollars. And as compared to that of Living Single and, you know, that cast, where, because Friends is literally the whitewashed version of Living Single. And then you think about the show The Big Bang Theory, where on there, all of the cast members, including the East Indian cast member, because at one point they almost tried to get rid of him. And the white cast members had to like band together to keep him on board because, you know, the network or whoever it was, somebody wanted to get rid of him because they felt like, oh, his character was basically pointless, whatever. But they had all band together one season because I believe they are still on the air. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they band together and they all got like, now they're getting like a million per episode, I believe. It's crazy, right? It's insane how they can do it. And they get what they want. But we are either too scared to do it, or when you do come together and you speak for higher pay, like that, like T.C. Carson did, who played Kyle, not Max. That was Erica Alexander. But T.C. Carson, who played Kyle, he actually was advocating for more pay. And they, you know, didn't agree with that. And basically he ended up getting wrote off and he came back for the series finale. He came back for that, you know, just to finish his story off because they basically were pissed off that it's like, oh, you're advocating for everybody. How dare you? It's that how dare you type of shit. So it's just crazy how these shows then go on and either they're on streaming services now or what have you, and how syndication works, that studios and executives, they're still making money off of this shit. But the actors, the actresses, the people who really poured their heart and soul, blood, sweat and tears, hell, even the writers, I'm sure, are still not seeing that money. And it's like, again, yes, we can talk about rich people problems all the fuck we want to, but it's like, why is it that black people still get cut out and can't even get the fucking crust of the pie? So they don't want to give you a slice. They don't want to give you a crumb. You can't even get the crust because they feel like, oh, that's too much. We paid you enough. You should have just accepted that. And that's the mentality that so many have bought into, that I just have to accept this type of treatment. I have to accept this type of treatment and take it for what it is. I can't advocate for myself, which is funny because I have a coworker who believes that you shouldn't advocate for yourself. Nigga, you've been doing security for 30 fucking years. You're 65. You're a fucking senior citizen. And on top of that, fuck it, because I'm a drag. Your body is literally failing. That one kidney that you got left is literally crashing out on you. And you never believed in advocating. You never believed in advocating for yourself, but yet you're so quote unquote pro-black. No, motherfucker, you're a fraud. Because if you were really pro-black, you would advocate for yourself and for other people. But it's funny how I, as the younger person in the scenario, am advocating and doing way more than you. Okay. Just so we're clear. Like it's funny how the youth is doing more than that of the elder. Like, bitch, because you're a fucking spineless coward. That's another conversation, y'all. Didn't mean to pivot too damn much and go on a tangent, but fuck that nigga. Anyway, it's funny how even people, again, in your everyday day-to-day life versus, you know, outside of the entertainment industry, there are people who look just like us, black people, who don't believe in advocating for themselves or advocating for other black people on the job because it's like, oh, well, I don't want to get in trouble with myself because that's what that boils down to. They're afraid of this massa, which is capitalism, this massa, which is the job, the employer. They're afraid to lose that good, solid spot because I's a good slave, that type of shit. And it's like when you're around those type of people, you can't help but to just see them for who they are and just acknowledge, you're a fucking coward and you don't have a spine. But when you say that, you're in the wrong, right? You're the bad guy. You're the villain. Because, oh, my God, how dare you? How dare you come for our heroes? Yeah, well, our quote unquote, well, y'all heroes, quote unquote, are out here still participating in that of capitalistic greed because they're ensuring that they get their cut. But fuck everybody else. Because how is it that, you know, pivoting over to Mr. Tyler Perry, all of those actors who are on his shows, like they're, you know, I believe some, I forgot who it wasn't Monique who had bought this up, but it was somebody else who had bought it up. And I remembered them. They were saying how like they don't even walk around with security when they're out and about down in Atlanta. If they go to the mall, they, you know, go to the grocery store or whatever. They're nobody. No. They're essentially, it's like, damn, people recognize them. But do you not also realize how dangerous that is? Because people are crazy. They are. People are. There are such things as stalkers and obsessed fans. But nobody is like, hey, maybe they should get security. Maybe they should be paid enough money. Because, again, I don't know. We don't really know how much they're being paid, but paid enough to where they can hire a security guard. I ain't saying that you got to have the crazy 88s like, you know, Kill Bill, like Cottonmouth and Kill Bill. But it's like, damn, can they at least get enough money to pay at least one person to be 24-hour security? Just one. If not two, but just one. Like, they can't get paid enough for that. So it's like they can just go anywhere. Now, if some shit happens to them, you know what? They can't be like, hey, well, you know, I work with so-and-so. Maybe I should hit him up. You know, I should hit up, you know, Mr. Perry and be like, hey, this happened to me. I need security. I need more money. You know, so it's just like people, they feel like, oh, how dare you come for our heroes? But, well, bitch, your heroes are participating in that of capitalism. And if we've already learned that European, you know, white supremacist capitalism is not going to save us, what then makes you think that black capitalism is going to save us? It won't. Because hoarding wealth does nothing, because you cannot take that wealth with you into the afterlife, wherever you end up in the afterlife. You cannot take that with you. You can't take it with you to the pearly gates, and you damn sure can't take it with you when you go to the gates of fire. I'm just shit. You can't even take that shit in the waiting room, a.k.a. purgatory. You can't take it nowhere. You can't fucking take it nowhere. So why hold on to it? I get it. I get what it's like to be without. So you want to make sure that when you get it again, you don't lose it. Or when you have it for the first time, that, yeah, you want to hold on to it, right? But after a while, Brian, it would be best to just let the shit go and bless other people's lives the way that your life has been. You know, people love to say, oh, God blessed me. Well, bitch, God is seeing you participate in greed. So, like, do you not realize that your blessing can be snatched away from you? Like, what is it? You know, it's just really weird how that just goes, you know? That people get so angry and so upset that you come for their heroes. Fuck the heroes. They always say don't meet your heroes because they end up disappointing you because you see who they are behind the fucking scenes and it disgusts you because it's like, oh my fucking God, this person really is an asshole. Oh my fucking God, this motherfucker is a bitch. Oh my God, like, I didn't know that they were like this. Yeah, because they put on an act. They put on an act and a front for the public. But when you're with them one-on-one, it's another conversation. Because it's funny how, you know, Oprah and Tyler, they were on her side, on Monique's side at one point, right? And so, hey, what's up, everybody? Just wanted to remind you again and thank you all for tuning in to the Royal Hour podcast with your good guy here, Prince Onyx. Please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and comments and feedback. I love that. But also, more importantly, it helps with pushing me and the show and my royal court, you all, and my lovely guests who I have on here from time to time, through the algorithm. Doing that helps all of us win in the grand scheme of things. So again, thank you for tuning in, and be sure to leave a rating and tell a friend to tell a friend and leave a comment. We at the Royal Hour podcast love you guys for that, and we thank you and appreciate you all tremendously. Thank you. Alrighty, and let's get back to the show. So as I was saying, you know, it's just weird how, you know, people are, again, they're like, oh, how dare you come for our heroes? Girl, fuck these heroes. They put on a fake and a front for everybody, yo. They're not who they really say they are. That's just so that they can stay in the position of, you know, being the good guy or being this. When a human, okay, because now it's like, y'all got to really think about this. When a human is revered as a god, that's when we really need to say, hey, what the fuck? And when a human is revered as a god, that is when we have a problem, y'all. When a human is being revered as a god, that's when we have a problem. That's when we have a problem. You're not a god. You may be a maestro, you know, a master of the craft or whatever, you know, a master of the arts, a master of whatever genre that you dominate. You know what I'm saying? That's as far as it could be, a king, a queen, you know, a duke, a duch, what is it? A duch, a duke, a count, a countess, prince, princess, you know, shit like that. You know what I'm saying? Like those titles are not like a god or a goddess. You know what I'm saying? Like those are titles that are reasonable to a degree. But even then, a king can be corrupt. A queen can be corrupt. If you've watched any medieval TV show or film, like, you know, Game of Thrones, what have you, we see that absolute power corrupts. With great power comes great responsibility, right? But a lot of these motherfuckers don't really give a fuck about the responsibility of actually doing right. Because as I was saying, you know, give that wealth away, because you're not going to be able to take it with you. It's not going to hurt you to ensure that conditions on a fucking film set are livable and, you know, beyond fair, that they are exceptionally well, that they are good. It's not going to hurt you to make sure that your actors and actresses have at least one fucking security guard with them while they're out and about, when they're not shooting on set, on your set. It's not going to kill you it's not going to kill your pockets to just do right by people. It's not going to hurt you to do right by people. But then that then begs the question of, okay, do you really got that money like that? Or are you know, faking and fraud, you faking and, you know, faking the funk and you're fraudulent? What is it giving? Because it's not giving that. It's giving that you're just sitting on wealth, because you'll be damned if you come up off of it. And it's just like, again, do you not realize that the blessing that you were blessed with, the blessing that you were blessed with, can be taken the fuck away? I'm just saying, you know, it's like, hey, but, you know, I digress. But overall, the interview was good. I definitely appreciated it for what it was worth. You know, and it's always interesting, again, with Club Shay Shay, how he'll interview a Cat Williams or a Monique, and they get millions upon millions of views. But then the follow-up interviews be with other comedians. And, you know, I mean, they get their views too. But it's just like these newer people, you know, newer comedians. It's just like, yo, they're still playing the game. They're still playing it safe. They're not going to name names. They're not going to say certain things because they, you know, they don't want to piss certain people off. Because, again, nobody's trying to go back into a life of poverty, a life without, a life of struggle. Nobody's trying to go back to what they used to do and what they used to have prior to their fame, prior to their notoriety, prior to their bank accounts seeing deposits larger than they ever could have imagined. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's trying to do that. So they're going to play it safe. You know, they're going to play it safe. But anyway, so aside from that, because, you know, I had to, you know, give the acknowledgement of the interview because it was good. Let's talk about the part of the interview towards the end where she spoke on her oldest son, who basically she has said in numerous interviews that their relationship is fucked up. To put it to you quite frank, y'all, that it's fucked up. That he don't want nothing to do with her. You know, she has tried, tried to basically paint herself as the mother dearest, you know, Auntie Monique, you know what I'm saying? And come to find out that that's not the case, that she has been a deadbeat mother, you know? And I'll say this too, because she is, I believe, what is it? She's not a Capricorn. She's a Sagittarius. And it's not just I'm not just using the zodiac to blame all of these issues. It is just that typically when it comes to Sagittarius women, if they are a mother, the parenting is going to be half-assed. They're going to fuck up 50 to 75% of the time. They're going to fuck up. They're not going to take ownership or accountability for where they misstepped. And then also they feel like, just like a lot of Black parents from Monique's generation, for those of us who are like in our 20s or 30s, you know, you most likely have parents that come from Monique's generation. Generation X, where they feel like, oh, well, I birthed you. I brought you into this world. I did X, Y, Z for you. They will list out the laundry list of the materialistic things that they have done for you, as well as, you know, if it's the woman birthing you into the world, they will list all of that. But damn the fact that, you know, we're talking about things like emotional intelligence, nurturing in the sense of like, okay, there were points where empathy was missing, where sympathy was missing. There are points where, you know, I wasn't treated fairly. There was gaslighting. There was this. When you manipulation, when you bring these things up, you know, they get offended and they don't want to take accountability. So here is her oldest son. I believe his name is Shylon. And, you know, he's basically like, hey, you know, our relationship is fucked up mainly because of you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and even down to his daughter, your grandchild, he was thinking, even though he was trying to fight those thoughts off, like he said in the video on TikTok, he was trying to fight those thoughts off that if my mother didn't want anything to do with me, what the fuck would she want to do with you? And he, sure enough, those thoughts that he was trying to fight off were actually accurate. They were actually accurate. And it's unfortunate because the way that she treats him, it's like, you know, basically you're treating your own biological child like the stepchild. You know what I'm saying? You don't want shit to do with him. And it all boils down to Sydney, a.k.a. her daddy. And it's just like, I'm going to say this. Sydney, while there may be a good area, while there may be good spots with Sydney, it's a lot of fuckery, too. That it's like, dude, it's giving off this Kendu energy. Kendu is Mary J. Blige's ex-husband, and they've, you know, went through that whole divorce situation, and she had to pay him all this money and all of this shit. You know, it's giving that you are an opportunist, and that while Monique is, you know, still, I'll say to a degree, she's still somewhat of a pariah in certain circles in the industry, you are an opportunist in the fact that you are trying to take control of this woman's life. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like her older son is, you know, basically just letting it be known why the relationship is how it is. And here you guys come with an Instagram live video, basically, you know, ruining what was supposed to be a good moment for Monique with her coming just off of the Club Shay Shay interview. Here you guys are basically berating him, bringing up his mental health, bringing up his sexuality, all types of stuff that shouldn't even be brought up. But it's to dismiss what he is saying about you. When it's like, Monique, at the end of the day, I'm going to say this. If you cannot put Sydney in his place, because no woman should ever put a man before their fucking children. I'm going to say that again. No woman should ever put a man before their children. You put your trust in a nigga. Stupid hoe, how you figure? And I'm going to leave it at that. But you should never put a man before that of your fucking children. Because should that man leave you, should you and Sydney ever divorce, you're going to have a lot of egg on your face. You know what I'm saying? Like, should some shit ever go down where y'all just, you know, break up, which no one's wishing that on y'all. But should some shit ever happen, who you going to have? Other than the children that you've had with him, it's like, yo, who are you going to have? And then shit, they may be divided and take daddy's side. You know what I'm saying? Because when it comes to divorce and shit like that, parents can be really fucking manipulative, especially them Gen X motherfuckers. They, Okay, if we've learned anything from a lot of these movies and TV shows and even just real life experiences, parents can be manipulative as fuck. They feel like, oh, well, you should take my side because of XYZ. When, truth be told, you're not trying to take anybody's side. You're not trying to take anyone's side. You just want your parents to stop fucking fighting. And to grow the fuck up and be mature. Speaking from experience. But anyway. But the way that she was carrying on in the Instagram video towards her son, it was disgusting and it was triggering for a lot of people, myself included, just because, again, that manipulation and that gaslighting of, oh, well, I did this for you. I bought, what the fuck is buying a car for him supposed to mean when he felt like you, when, you know, you were a deadbeat parent, you were not the best parent. And yes, we can talk about the nuance part that a lot of people are overlooking in the fact that, you know, okay, your parents, Monique, your parents wasn't shit. They were not shit. The way that your father helped your sister out to get a car instead of helping you out, which fucked you up. And you mentioned that in the interview with Shannon Sharp, Club Shay Shay. The way that fucked you up because of the favoritism that, oh, I'm going to help out this daughter, but I'm not going to help you out. I'm going to help out your sister. I'm not going to help you out. And when you went to your, I believe it was her grandmother or her aunt, but I want to say her grandmother. She, you know, and she was really upset about it. Her grandmother said, you know what? The parent is going to help out the child who they know won't be all right before they help out the child who they know will be all right. Monique, you're going to be all right. Meaning that, you know what? You may feel like, yo, he fucked you over. And yeah, he did. Because damn, you can't help me out with co-signing for a car, but you're going to help this bitch out. Yes, yeah, because he probably knows that bitch, your sister, you know, she probably going to struggle in life way more than you. And probably she is on the low. Let's just keep it a buck. You know, so you see why your father, in hindsight, years down the line, you see, damn, okay, no wonder why he always had her back versus mine. But also because you got to a point where you started questioning, you know, whenever a child, a black child in the context of the black family, whenever you start questioning your parents and their motives, their ways, their behaviors, they feel a type of way. Oh, how dare you question me? If the rest of the fucking world can question you, how is it that your child can't question you or just simply have questions that they're seeking answers to? Again, a lot of this shit boils down to generational trauma and the ball being dropped, being simply passed down to the next generation. Hence why she was not the best mother, because here you are chasing fame because you wanted to be famous, even though you said that, you know, knowing what you know now in that interview, that if you knew the amount of money that you were going to make and the money that you missed out on, you would have not only wished to be famous as a child, but to also be financially, you know, well off, which not to say that you're not well off, but, you know, just as a child, you know, you only think about the fame. You don't really think about the money, or you do think about the money, but you just want to be famous, which I used to be that way too as a child. Whereas now it's no longer about being famous. Bitch, I just want to make sure you pay me and I get my money and I don't have to ever clock in or out of another 9 to 5. Okay. But anywho, you know, knowing what you know now, you know, you just wish that you would have asked for, you know, also financial stability. But, you know, it's just like, Monique, you have to own up to the fact that you were an ain't shit parent. Because neither, from what your son is saying, neither of you are even putting in any effort to repair the relationship. And I'm pretty sure it's because of Sydney. I'm pretty sure he has his hand in the pot of that, making sure that you and your first child never make amends. Because your son sees what a lot of us do not see when it comes to you and Sydney. And he's been exposing that as well. And the way that he, like, politely read y'all down to the ground and wrapped the both of y'all up like a fucking Christmas present in July was insane. Okay, like, when I tell y'all, when they say shit needs to be studied, that right there needs to be studied, because he kept his composure when he could have easily lost his shit. And I feel like even with the Instagram live, you and Sydney were doing that in order to get to bait him into snapping off. Because, again, when a black person snaps off and they're going all irate and all of this other shit, it's easier to write them off. But don't you see how you're doing the same thing that was done to you to that of your son? Like, here's the thing, my sweet babies. Here's the thing, Monique. We can all have love for you, but goddamn it, woman, you fucked over your son, and that's not okay. You need to make amends with him. You need to fucking make amends with him, and y'all need to apologize and patch things up, because you know what? Not even, because even though this is, and this is definitely a manipulation tactic. Yes, we know that you're not going to be here forever. We know that at some point you will perish. But why keep using that as the crutch for why you treat your child the way that you do? Again, speaking from fucking experience, we all know that we're not going to live forever. But why is it that while you are here, you're carrying on in the way that you do? You, like, black parents really missed the ball on that. And again, we can talk about the generational trauma. We can talk about post-traumatic slave syndrome disorder. We can talk about how slavery fucked everybody up. We can talk about that. But if we're not going to do the work that is necessary to fix these generational wounds, then what the fuck are we doing? Seriously, what the fuck are we doing? If we're not going to sit down and really hammer this shit out and really heal, you're going to keep bleeding out onto everybody who did not cut you. You're going to keep bleeding out onto everybody who did not shoot you. You're going to keep bleeding out onto everybody who did not hurt you. And that's the problem with Generation X, is that, you know, oh, I'm grown, you can't tell. Ain't nobody trying to tell you how the fuck to think. Ain't nobody trying to tell you how to feel. What we are trying to say to you fucking morons is, hey, get it the fuck together, because this behavior is not okay. And especially as an adult talking to another adult, and even if you are a child talking to the adult in question, you still have a right to voice how the fuck you feel. Give a fuck how they feel. Fuck them, because if they don't give a fuck about how you feel, fuck how they feel. And that's just me, Prince Onyx, okay? Sincerely. So, you know, but just to... Again, Monique, this ain't helping you in no way, shape, or form. This is, if anything, this is ruining the fact that the public, because the majority of the blacks, the majority of niggas don't really like to fuck with you ever since the whole, you know, asking people to boycott Netflix, and because they feel like you keep beating the dead horse with this whole, you know, Tyler Perry and Oprah situation. People keep feeling like that. And here we are, those of us who actually understand where you're coming from, and when it comes to that situation, sticking up for you. And for me, it's never I've never shifted, unlike a lot of people I've seen. I've never shifted when it comes to defending Monique, you know what I'm saying, as a black woman. But in this instance, when it comes to her and her son, she's dead fucking wrong. And I will say that to her face, if given the chance. You're dead fucking wrong, and you need to fix that. The same way that you want these two billionaire, millionaire motherfuckers to apologize to you, which neither one of them hoes are ever going to do, and we all need to, we do need to accept that. But even though they should, because it's like, hey, make things right. Okay. But you need to fix your problems at home. You know, as they say, it starts at home. Yeah, bitch, it starts at home. So you need to fucking fix that. Okay. Okay. But anyway, you guys, we are at the end of the show. We are out of time for this segment and for this episode. But I want to thank you guys for tuning in to the Royal Hour podcast with your good guy here, Prince Onyx. And I forgot to mention this earlier, but surprise, surprise, baby, we are in season two. Like I said, I was going to start off season two how I wanted to, on my own time, my own dime, and all of that stuff. And here we are, baby, season two, episode one. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I can't wait to come back to you guys with more. So much more in the pipeline that I got lined up that's coming down to you guys, and I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Be sure to like, share, comment, and subscribe per usual. Wow. And, you know, again, share with friends, with family. Hell, share with your ex if you cool with them. Or hell, even if you're not and you just want somebody to yell in their ear other than you, hey, I'm your guy. Well, you're going to have to probably pay for that. But anyway. But I love you guys a lot. Thank y'all again for tuning in to the Royal Hour with your good guy here, Prince Onyx. And you guys have yourself a good one. Peace. Hey guys, what's going on? I just wanted to let you guys know, before we get on up out of here with your good guy here, Prince Onyx, I just want to let you lovely people know where you can find me. So if you are in the TikTok streets, you can find me at Prince of the Go. That is P-R-I-N-C-E. O-F-T-H-E-G-O. And the Go is short for Chicago. Or you can just simply type in Prince Onyx and I will pop up. Now that same name I just gave you, Prince of the Go, you can also find me under that same moniker over at Instagram. You know, trying to keep in tune with the whole Prince royalty background, you know, the brand. And you can also find me under my second Instagram, Prince of Gotham, with the number one, and Gotham, like, you know, Gotham City, you know, in case you guys haven't put two and two together, comic book reference. And you guys can also find me at Fanbase Prince Onyx. And you can also find me on these Twitter streets, Prince Onyx World. Now that, after you spell out Prince, the Onyx is O-N-Y-X, all capitalized, and World is spelled W-R-L-D, so it's World minus the O, and that is all capitalized as well. So be sure that you are following me and keeping up to date with me and staying in touch with me, as I want to hear from you lovely people. And other than that, we will go ahead and get on up out of here. So I love you guys lots, and let me know your thoughts on this recent episode. Until we meet again, peace. Oh, and how could I forget? You can also find me on YouTube, Prince Onyx. Hello, come on now. I'm definitely trying to keep this brand going and going and going and going. Not even trying. I am keeping this brand going. But again, I just want you guys to know where you guys can find me. All right, talk to you later. Peace.